Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, April 11th. I'm Joel Ficklin, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Fortuna Council approves Key City Center intersection project. The Jimi Hendrix of Africa comes to Arcata, and the KMUD News Sports Report. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Fortuna is seeking major improvements to one of its most used intersections. Daniel Minsk reports.
Fortuna is moving ahead with a long-planned and ambitious traffic and pedestrian improvement project in the center of the city. Approval of an interchange construction project at 12th Street, Newburgh Road, and Highway 101 was made at the Fortuna City Council's April 7th meeting. The interchange project includes realignments of Newburgh Road and Pond Street, constructing a roundabout at Newburgh Road and 12th Street, a new road for access to the former Pacific Lumber Mill site, multi-use pathways, and a pedestrian bridge over U.S. Highway 101. In the works for a number of years, the project addresses significant traffic and usability issues, as described by Fortuna Public Works Director Brendan Bird.
This area currently offers limited to no bike and ped connectivity over the freeway or in the interchange areas themselves. They're somewhat confusing, and they're composed of non-standard geometries that were driven by design standards of a long time ago, in addition to the railroad right-of-ways and the old Newburgh Line Railroad that used to go through that area. Right now, the non-standard geometries make vehicle turning movements and safety a little bit less than you would desire in today's modern world. And there's an accident and a collision history at that intersection that specifically in front of Newburgh is about twice the statewide average. Lastly, the level of service, which is a measure of how long a vehicle generally needs to wait to make a turning movement at an intersection, that is very low and is only projected to get lower. And during peak times, the westbound Newburgh turn movements get very congested, backing up all the way, in as far as the residential neighborhoods along Newburgh.
Josh Wolf of the Eureka-based GHD engineering consulting firm said realignment of Newburgh Road, starting at Sunnybrook Lane, is a key aspect of the project and will connect the road to Pond Street and the Highway 101 on-ramp. The project will also enhance access to the former Pacific Lumber Mill site with a new intersection to provide access to it. The project is, quote, more or less anchored by the new roundabout, he continued. Multi-use pathways will extend along 12th Street, and an additional multi-use path will cross 12th Street and be part of the Great Redwood Trail corridor. Wolf described how the intersection's pedestrian use will be improved.
Over circled here in pink are the various crosswalks that are included as part of the project. These are all enhanced with rectangular rapid flashing beacons, which I know you're familiar with in town. These are push-button activated blinking lights that draw attention to pedestrians that are in the crosswalk or looking to make a crossing, so they're really great safety enhancements. In addition, we'd also include pedestrian refuge islands, which essentially shorten the crossing distance for pedestrians to get across a road. Instead of having to cross two legs or two lanes of traffic, they can cross one leg at a time, so it's a really nice enhancement. And the last feature I want to highlight was the bridge over US 101. So as part of this project, we are proposing to include a separate pedestrian-only bridge that would connect the intersection shown here to the south side of Highway 101.
The project area's most affected property is Clendenin Cider Works, which would lose overflow parking along 12th Street. Speaking during a public comment period, Clendenin's owner Cliff Clendenin asked for city support of his purchase of a field that is a California Department of Transportation right-of-way for parking and potential orchard expansion. Bird said the idea of a letter of support for Clendenin's purchase of the field property can be explored. Bird described the steps following approval of the project design and how funding for the planning and permitting phase is secured but uncertain after that.
The consultant team in the city would work with Caltrans to make sure the NEPA process is finalized, because Caltrans is the NEPA lead agency for the project. The project team would complete the PA and ED phase, which we're ultimately hoping will be sometime in the fall of this year. And with that, that'll close the funded work for this portion of the project. So we would close out the STIP grant with Caltrans. And from there, staff and the community and HCOG will continue to advocate for the project, to do what we can to find funding opportunities, to leverage all of the stakeholders who are involved in this, and ultimately hope to get these key improvements delivered for the city of Fortuna.
The project's design and its environmental analysis was unanimously approved, with Mayor Mike Johnson saying, quote, "This is a big project and a big step forward." Also approved at the meeting was a project analysis of options for improving traffic at Kenmare Boulevard and Ross Hill Road. The meeting capped Byrd's last day as the city's public works director, as he's starting new work as executive director of the Humboldt County Association of Governments. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In state news, UC students denounced Trump education and research cuts at Killed the Cuts protest. Eileen Alfandari reports.
Kill the cuts! Kill the cuts!
Students rallied under sunny skies on the UC Berkeley campus. They denounced the billions of dollars in cuts President Trump has made to federal grants funneled through the National Institutes of Health and other initiatives. They also pointed to the 8% cut in funding for the University of California and Governor Gavin Newsom's proposed budget. Tonsil Chowdhury is a fifth-year PhD student in materials science and engineering. He's also on the executive board of UAW Local 4811.
The cuts to public research, education, and healthcare being proposed by the Trump administration and Governor Gavin Newsom pose a grave threat to, you know, our community here at Berkeley, a grave threat to all the folks who suffer from diseases like cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's, and a huge threat to students, both in the state at this university and nationwide.
Caitlin Vittenkall is a metabolic biology PhD student.
I'm right now doing research on fatty liver disease, and that is very important for everyone across the world, because fatty liver disease is prevalent to around 25% of the whole entire world. And if I can't get any of that funding, then that is going to be even more difficult for us to even push forward to that, for to make any advances into that disease.
UC Berkeley has the largest number of international students among the UC campuses, about 15% of the overall student body. Vittenkall says these are scary times for them, as the Trump administration has undertaken a hard-charging campaign of revoking the visas of foreign students who have protested for Palestine, and sometimes for no apparent reason. She says some foreign students declined to come to the Kill the Cuts rally, fearing they could be deported as a result.
People who are afraid of the Trump administration coming over to revoke their visas because of the Trump administration coming in and saying, oh, if you speak up against us, we're going to revoke your visas and deport you. That is happening all across the United States, and that is a fear-mongering.
Julia Falo San Juan is a postdoctoral student in molecular and cell biology. She's from Spain, putting her at risk, but said it was important to show up to protest the cuts anyway.
So my feeling is everyone's scared, but everyone at the same time knows that this is part of transplant, that they, like, he just wants to scare international people out, and people don't want to let that get to them. So they know we have to do something, so that's why a lot of people will still be here today. At the same time, everyone's still worried.
The nationwide Kill the Cuts rallies were the latest in a dizzying series of protests against the Trump administration and Trump's DOGE advisor, Elon Musk. Last weekend, organizers say more than 1 million people showed up in more than 1,300 events around the country and the world, protesting what organizers call the illegal looting and elimination of public services, resources, and jobs. From the UC Berkeley campus, I'm Eileen Alfandari, KPFA News.
A benefit show for Southern Humboldt's only free theater program for youth will take place tomorrow at Beginnings in Bryceland. The young actors and music director invite the community to attend.
I'm Jessie Lee. I have acted as the music director for Recycled Youth here. And this year we have Christy Augustine and Dylan Weber helping us out. And we have a show coming up tomorrow, Saturday, April 12th at 7 p.m. with Recycled Youth to benefit Recycled Youth.
Every year, the cast of youth actors come together to write, direct, and produce their own original play, many times focusing on difficult issues of the moment. And the same will be said for tomorrow's event.
My name is Vivian, and I like Recycled Youth because it brings kids and people together.
Hi, my name is Lily Folkers, and I like Recycled Youth because you can create characters and act them out, and you get to hang out with your friends and make stories and stuff, and it's just really fun all together. It's like a community thing.
What are you doing tomorrow?
Our show is going to be about basically cell phone use and social media and how it's like it can be bad for you, and it's like kind of a lie, and it can make you have like self-hatred and things like that because it's showing you things that you want or things that you can't have and stuff like that. So yeah,
I've really enjoyed working with these kids in this program because I know personally firsthand that having after school arts programs when I was a teenager was so impactful to my life and to my mental health. And to watch these kids not only work together and come together for a creative project, but also take on such heavy types of issues and have social commentary on what's happening in the present moment and be able to bring that out in a real creative way is just amazing to watch happen. And I love being a part of it, and I love supporting it. I think it's a really important program to keep here in Southern Humboldt.
The director, also a musician, will be performing and encourages all to support the arts.
Yeah, I also perform as Hera Has a Heart, and I'm celebrating my third album release, The Madness, this year. And this will be my first show this year where I perform a one-woman rock opera that's also very theatrical. And I just wanted to share the day with Recycled Youth because it's just such a great program and bring that to light. And my show is really focused on finding that balance between self-care and community care. And also brings up a lot of issues that I think are important to our community. So it's going to be a really great day with also a interactive art installation. And one of our Recycled Youth alumni will have some of their crafts there and lots of different art to see as well as performances to see live. Support the arts and support art educators, support our arts programs. Let's all keep supporting our creativity in the community.
The event takes place Saturday, April 12th at 7 p.m. in the Octagon at Beginnings in Bryceland. A rock musician, sometimes called the Jimi Hendrix of Africa, starts the California leg of his U.S. tour at the Arcata Theater Lounge next Tuesday. KMUD's Sigur Bjorn.
Vu Farkatore is a Malayan musician and one of the chief proponents of a musical style sometimes called desert blues, a style with deep roots in traditional Saharan and West African music that has also been shaped by Western influences. Besides his solo work, Vue Farka is known for his collaboration with American musicians and musical acts such as Dave Matthews, Derek Trucks, and the Houston-based trio Krungbin. KMUD spoke to the musician ahead of his April 15 concert at the Arcata Theatre Lounge. And, as he reminded us, he has played Arcata before, back in 2019.
It's not my first time in Al-Qaeda, for sure. A long time ago, he sounds, you know, staying in my head, you know, because it's a cool name, you know, Al-Qaeda. So I think it's not my first time, but this time we're going to be with my band too, traditionally and modern, you know. So you have some traditional instrument and some modern instrument. So I love to mix the traditional instrument and the modern instrument. So we have some bass guitars, but we have also some instrument, traditional instrument.
The traditional instruments are the calabash drum and ngoni, a string instrument, both associated with a Saharan musical style known internationally as desert blues. When listening to the seductive thrust of the desert blues beat, it's hard not to picture sand drifting along the windswept dunes of the Sahara. This sound is an unmistakable part of Vue Farka Touré's music, and even though he's not necessarily crazy about the label desert blues, he admits that the music springs from the environment of his hometown, Nifunke, a river town at the edge of the desert.
You know, the music's come from where I'm born. It's like my music's come from Nyafanki. It's come from the North Mali, it's come from the desert. But in Nyafanki, we have the two. We have the desert and we have water. So it's between the water and the desert, you know. People like call this music desert blues. There in Nyafanki, we just call the folklore.
There is a reason the beat of the desert blues, or folklore, seems to come so easy to Vue Farka. His father, the late Ali Farka Touré, was largely credited with introducing this genre to the world in the early 80s. All this time later, the gospel of the desert blues is still being spread around the world by contemporary acts like Tinariwen, Songhai Blues, Bambino, and of course, the younger Farka Touré. However, while they all play a similar type of music, Vue Farka's style seems more overtly influenced by American music than those other North and West African acts. And there is a reason for that.
You know, in the morning, when my father's like, he's wake up in the morning, before we go to the school, he's just put Johnny Hooker or B.B. King or I don't know. They're like old musician, like for minutes. And he have big radio and he put there, you know, loud. So before we go, we listen. But we listen all the time, this kind of music with him.
Vue Farka's own sound gets its identity from this blend of the traditional and the foreign. An example of a quintessential Vue Farka track is Homafu Wawa from the album Sampa, with the cool licks and fast finger of his blues and rock influenced guitar playing front and center.
When you play the music, when you hear like the blues from like Johnny Hooker, like B.B. King, all this stuff, you know, you hear these songs from the desert. You hear this, you know, it's same when the people like somebody playing in Nyafanki. When I take my music from North Mali, the desert blues, how you say it, I have to put something else to just tell the people this is Vue Farka. When you hear, you say, okay, this is a song for Vue Farka. I'm just doing music, you know. So I'm just doing music. Like I'm playing some rock and roll stuff, reggae, some, I don't know, some traditional stuff. So for me, it's really just doing music.
Being the son of a musical legend has its advantages, and Vue Farka has embraced it. But because his father felt let down by the business side of the music industry, he was reluctant to let his son follow in his footsteps, or even to play the guitar.
If he get 2,000 for pay, they give him 100. And they give him the contract. He never got school. He don't know what they said. He just signed it. So he didn't like me to be in the same situation. But that's why he said, okay, I don't like you to be a musician because I know what's happening when you are a musician. It's not good. Good. I say, no, it's not same. And your time, and your time, you can read the contract and see what the contract mean, what you have to do, what's good or what's not good, you know. So, and this, he said, okay, if you want to be a musician, you have to finish your school first, and then we will see. It's how we say, we will see if you're going to be a musician or not. But I played like long time secretly before he knew I'm playing guitar. You know, but I'm used to playing drums. He knew I'm playing drums, but he didn't know I'm playing guitar.
While his father was often called the John Lee Hooker of Africa, Vuyo Farka's style of guitar playing has drawn comparisons with Jimi Hendrix. So who of the two has a cooler comparison, father or son?
I don't know. You know, it's... so, you know, people like tell me, Jimmy, you play like Jimi Hendrix, you play like... I say, okay. You know, I don't listen too much to Jimi Hendrix. I listen more like the John Lee Hooker and another musician than Jimi Hendrix. You see? But I love the music from John Lee Hooker's music. I love these guys.
Vuyo Farka Touré, here playing with his late father on the 2011 album The Secret, will be at the Arcata Theatre Lounge on Tuesday, April 15. This is Sigurd Bjørn, reporting for KMOD.
We now close tonight's news with Ray Hamill in the KMOD News Sports Report.
The Fortuna Huskies have taken over sole possession of top spot in the Big 5 softball standings ahead of a huge doubleheader of action this weekend. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Huskies and their big week in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including all the latest high school and college baseball and softball in what was a very busy week, as well as some exciting news for one of the best young basketball players on the North Coast. But first up, the high-flying Fortuna Huskies got their Big 5 campaign off to an impressive start on the softball fields this week. On Saturday, the Fortuna girls began conference play with a doubleheader sweep over Eureka, winning 12-1 and 15-7, and they followed that on Wednesday with an 11-1 win over McKinleyville. The midweek victory was the team's seventh straight, as the Huskies improved to 11-1 on the season and 3-0 in the Big 5, moving them one win clear of the chasing pack in the standings. Two-time defending conference champions, the Del Norte Warriors, also began conference play in impressive fashion, sweeping a doubleheader at Arcata High School on Saturday. The Warriors won 15-4 and 10-1, and they are now 2-0 in the Big 5 and 9-1 on the season. The Del Norte girls had a bye in conference action on Wednesday and will travel to play a doubleheader at Fortuna on Saturday in a pair of games that will go a long way towards deciding this year's championship. The doubleheader gets underway at 11 a.m. The two Big 5 frontrunners will also play a third game against each other in Crescent City later in the month. Also in the Big 5 this week, the Arcata girls bounced back from their two weekend losses against Del Norte with a 13-3 win over Eureka on Wednesday. In Little Force softball, conference frontrunners South Fork and St. Bernard's faced off in Samoa in a big doubleheader on Thursday. The two rival schools split, with the Crusaders scoring three runs in the bottom of the seventh inning for a come-from-behind 8-7 walk-off win in Game 1. But the Cubs would respond with a dominating performance in Game 2, winning 22-6. Also on Thursday, the Hoopa and Ferndale girls split a doubleheader, with the Warriors taking Game 1 9-3 and the Wildcats winning Game 2, 11-9. Earlier in the week, the Crusaders swept a doubleheader at Ferndale to get their conference campaign underway, winning 14-0 and 12-2. St. Bernard's and South Fork are both 3-1 in conference and tied for the Little 4 lead, with Hoopa and Ferndale both 1-3. In local high school baseball, meanwhile, the defending Big 5 champions, the McKinleyville Panthers, got their 2025 campaign off to a winning start on Wednesday, winning 11-1 at Fortuna. Conference action got underway at the weekend, and it was a good opening day for both Del Norte and Eureka. The Warriors traveled to Arcata High School and won a pair of games. Senior ace Preston Daniels pitched a no-hitter in the opener, leading the Del Norte boys to a 17-0 victory, and they followed that with a 13-10 come-from-behind win in Game 2. At Fortuna on Saturday, the Loggers won both games of a doubleheader, beating the Huskies 7-0 in each. On Wednesday, the Arcata boys bounced back from a disappointing weekend with a 5-4 win over Eureka in an exciting showdown at Arcata. Del Norte now sits atop the conference standings with a record of 2-0, followed by McKinleyville at 1-0, Eureka at 2-1, Arcata at 1-2, and Fortuna at 0-3. The action continues with two more doubleheaders on Saturday, including two big games between the Panthers and Loggers at Bilotti Field in Eureka. The action gets underway at 4:30 p.m., followed by Game 2 under the lights at 7. Also on Saturday, the Del Norte boys will try to keep their fast start to conference play going when they play a pair of games at Fortuna. In Little 4 baseball this week, the St. Bernard's boys continued to roll with a pair of wins over South Fork, defeating the Cubs 14-1 on Tuesday and 14-0 on Thursday. The two victories stretched the Crusaders' winning streak to 7 straight games, and they are now 4-0 in conference and 9-3 overall. After a disappointing opening week to their conference schedule last week, the Ferndale Wildcats got back to winning ways with a pair of wins over Hoopa this week, winning 12-4 on Tuesday and 15-5 on Thursday. The Ferndale boys, who are now 7-2 overall, sit second in the Little 4 standings with a record of 2-2, followed by both South Fork and Hoopa at 1-3. The Little 4 continues next week, with Hoopa playing St. Bernard's on Tuesday and Thursday, and South Fork playing Ferndale also on Tuesday and Thursday. The College of the Redwoods baseball team was also in action this week. The Corsairs played a pair of games against Feather River last Friday and lost both by scores of 5-4 and 16-4 before hosting Syracuse on Tuesday and splitting a doubleheader. The CR men fell 12-7 in the opener but bounced back to win 11-1 in Game 2. They are now 3-15 in the Golden Valley Conference and 6-20 overall, and they will host Shasta in a pair of games this weekend, including a Saturday showdown at noon at Bilotti Field across from the Redwood Acres. In local college softball, the Cal Poly Humboldt women lost 3 of 4 games at Cal State Dominguez Hills last weekend. The Jacks won the series opener 6-0, but then dropped 3 straight games, losing 8-6, 5-2, and 9-1. They are now 12-14 in the California Collegiate Athletic Association and 23-18 overall. They have 8 games remaining in the regular season, including 4 at Cal State San Bernardino this weekend, and they sit 7th in the conference standings. In other local sports this week, Arcata senior and 2-time Big 5 Boys MVP in basketball Luke Moxon announced that he has committed to play for the Montana Grizzlies after graduation this year. Moxon, who was also this year's Humboldt Sports Boys Basketball Player of the Year, will redshirt his first year with the Division 1 program, which qualified for this year's NCAA tournament. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer and thanks to our reporters. KMUD News is online. You can find us at KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD in Redway, I'm Joel Ficklin.